very welcome to this week's episode of They Mess You Up, the podcast with myself, Dr. Ciara Kelly.
And Dr. Richard Hogan.
And today we're going to be talking about dramatic people, people you have to deal with in your life who bring all the drama and suck all the oxygen and what you can do about it.
We all live with a dramatic person, don't we?
Yes. Or if we don't live with them, we know them. Yeah. They are in our workplace. They are in our extended family. They are in our friend group.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are the dramatic person. And we're not just talking about, Richard, the person who tells an entertaining story with a bit, oh, you won't believe what happened. We're talking about the person who's always in crisis or who is always sucking the oxygen from every conversation or who makes everything about themselves.
Yeah.
And even their minor struggles become heightened.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And there's no room left for you. There's no room left for your issues.
That is an important distinction to make, because we all have that kind of, as I said at the start, we all have that kind of person who's a bit dramatic. They go to the shop to get milk and something funny happens to them, you know. We all have that, you know. Have you ever seen Bridget Jones, you know, the singer? He's got a song from the 80s and
he's
always got a bit of drama going on in his life, and that's great to have in a friendship group, and there's a bit of levity around that. That's not what we're talking about here.
No.
We're talking about somebody who orchestrates crisis. We're talking about somebody who consumes and is a vacuous kind of person. The way I always think about it is like, they need sympathy, they need attention, and they need to see themselves as victims somehow. And so that kind of a person is quite destructive to be around.
Yeah.
And there's a pathology to that. And so what we're looking at today is like, how do you manage dramatic people who are a little bit more, you know, not just the person who has a funny story or something always kind of befalls them, like a Woody Allen kind of character, but actually somebody who is quite all-consuming in your life and takes the vacuum out of, you know.
And it is hard to manage them, because most of us, if we have a degree of empathy, we tend to kind of meet like with like.
Yeah.
So if you come to me and you have a sad story, I'm now a little bit sad, and I tonally shift to mirror in a way what you do. But the problem is that's one of the reasons it's so difficult to deal with a dramatic person, because if their heightened drama is brought into your life, your drama or stress levels go up, because you're like, oh, and this is
absolutely
imposed on you.
Yeah. And that's what the dramatic person actually does. They seek out the more amenable, the more agreeable kind of personality. They don't want another very dramatic person in their orbit. They want to have a lot of people who are peacekeepers in their orbit so that they get sucked into the drama. And this is a really important part here. And I always say this, and it's really important that we listen to this. Nobody should have access and have ultimate, unlimited access to her well-being. You know, nobody should have access to her energy like that. Not even her kids should have endless access to her energy and her well-being like that. And some people, when you're in their orbit, you're like a sponge. You take on their, you know, it's a modern term, they trauma dump. They put all their, whatever's happening, their new relationship, it's chaotic, the new whatever it is, they're bringing you into that, and then they leave and you're stuck there completely drenched a sponge, you know, in a bath.
Or they bring drama into your interaction with them. So you're out for a coffee and you've said something innocuous and the next thing it's a big deal.
Absolutely.
And they're nearly going to get up and walk off or something. Yeah. And you're like, oh, you
what
didn't say a word.
It was a joke or whatever I said, yeah.
And so, and then you're like reacting and you're left in that position of reacting and feeling a level of stress as in that kind of like for like way, and a level of drama in internally from what they're imposing on you. And I suppose we all, when we think about it that way, will be familiar with these people who make us feel stressed in their company.
Yeah.
They may be our friends. They may be our mother.
Yeah,
they may
exactly.
be our brother, our sister,
father,
our lover, our husband,
absolutely.
Our child.
Yeah. How do we manage the distance between them if there are, you know,
I think
parents?
We're probably better at admitting difficulties with our parents than we are with our own
child,
children.
Will we have a look at the psychology of what creates a dramatic person?
Yes, let's talk about that, because a lot of it is rooted, isn't it, in their need for attention, generally, like everything else, comes from childhood.
Yeah, so it does. You know, there's those, you know, those four big attachment theories from Bowlby, you know, the idea of like a secure attachment, 50% of the population of that, the rest of us are insecure, anxious, and avoidant.
I like the way you put us and say, because you're quite right.
Yeah, exactly. And so when we have a slight fracture in our attachment to our primary caregiver, I mean, there's evolution in here, all of a sudden it creates a heightened sense of dilemma in the child. So it's not about castigating the dramatic
person.
You
don't feel safe.
You don't, and you don't have a sense of self, which is really sad to say. I get emotional. I think that someone who, because I meet in my clinic, a sense of like lacking self, you know, a real lack of self. And so you'd sit with somebody and you can see the whole world that they've created, this dramatic world around them. And they might get momentary gain, you know, a small little gain, but it's like absolutely disrupting their whole meaningful, sustaining relationships. They get a little dopamine hit when there's a drama around them. And then it's chaos because people get sick of that pretty quickly.
Yeah, I know.
And so they're quite isolated. And they're, you know, there's that relaxed sense. There's a crack in your fundamental concept of yourself. And that's why fundamentally you don't believe you're enough. So you have to create drama around you all the time.
I think that's the same thing in a way. They don't feel seen.
Yeah.
And maybe they didn't get it. Maybe they had an alcoholic parent,
exactly.
Or they had an absent parent, or they had something there. Whatever they had. As you say, it fractured that fundamental primary caregiver thing. And so now they think that in order to be on the same level, they have to deliver more, or it has to be bigger, or it has to...
You're right.
It's sucking attention because adequate, normal, calm levels of attention, the routine is not enough.
No, yeah. You're right. Absolutely. And there's so much neuroscience behind what you just said there, like dopamine gets triggered very early in your childhood. And then you see a parent who might be disorganized and chaotic. And so you see how they react to their emotional disturbance. And that becomes a template for you and how you react to your emotional disturbance. And so the internal disturbance that you feel, you create an external disturbance around you to kind of almost give a balance between the two things.
It's like we all have a comfort zone. And for some people who are that kind of heightened drama personality, their comfort zone is dramatic. When it is all calm and normal, that makes them uneasy in some way because...
Well, who am I?
Yeah, and also I do think they feel insecure in that setting too, because in a dramatic interaction with other people, the other people are giving more. Anger, it's attention, but it might be negative attention sometimes.
But it still fires dopamine.
It does. And that's when they feel seen and connected.
That's when they feel most alive.
And that is so problematic for them. It's a miserable place for them. But it's so problematic to be around, isn't it?
To be in the orbit of that person.
Yeah, because it sucks. It reminds me, there's the crossover with it when I no doubt come to this in a different part, narcissism.
There's an intersection, sucking the oxygen from
the room.
There's an intersection between those two things, an overly dramatic person and narcissistic kind of personality disorder for sure. So there's a little bit of the context of why somebody might become overly dramatic. Now, so what do we do about it?
Oh.
How do we manage, let's look at maybe first of all, people in our lives. How do we manage those relationships?
It's easy to say, and people listening go, well, you just avoid them. Mm. And that's obvious and easy.
But what about your mom?
Or your child, or your boss, exactly. Or people that you've had since childhood or something.
Yeah.
So you don't really feel that walking away is the option. So how, like, obviously a strong boundary is important and stepping away entirely might, but people don't always step away. So
and
then
I,
it is
yeah.
that boundary management, isn't it?
It is, because most of us have relationships where this person is in our lives, and it could be like an in-law. And so then you're managing physical distance between them, and you're just turning up and, hello, Kira, how are you? And it's all just like, you know, superficial interaction there. And you leave, bye, Kira, off you go. And you haven't interacted any way deeply, or they haven't impacted on your mental health. You're not leaving angry with yourself and all that with a dramatic person. But if it's your parent, what I would always say there, if it's a parent, I wouldn't ever prescribe ruling out a parent or just cutting them off. I'd always say when I'm working with clients, first of all, let's see your parent in the context of who they are. You know, not just your parent. They're a person who came out of their childhood and their family system. And that's messy, as we always talk here. I'm messy, Kira. Are you messy?
I know I'm messy.
I've lived in your orbit for a while.
you know how messy I am.
But you know what I mean?
So listen, kids, do what I say, don't do what I do.
Exactly.
No, I'm only
healer,
joking.
Heal thyself.
Yeah, no,
but you know what I mean? We all have these, we all come out of family systems that make us a certain way, and then we go into school and that makes us a certain way, and we have relationships growing up through our maturation years and all that. That makes us a certain way. So this is what I'd say to people. Look at your parent not as your parent. Look at them as a person through the lens of a bit of forgiveness, because they're messy and this is what they've done as an intervention to live
and
in the world.
And these things are intergenerational trauma that
sure.
it rolls downstream.
Absolutely.
So if you think you had a problem with your mother or father or whoever, they probably had it with the generation above them who had it
probably
with the generation
worse in some ways.
And when you think about how they were parented, which was children should be seen and not heard, and you know, bear in mind my own mother came from that generation where she was sent to live with a maiden aunt at one stage because the maiden aunt was a bit lonely. So she was actually sent out of her family dynamic.
It was only
a couple of streets
away. But still, it's incredible to us. Imagine sending your kid out.
I've always said, if my sister or brother were a bit lonely, I wouldn't give them one of my kids. But that was a thing.
It was.
Or if you have a good few kids, one of them might be sent to work on your brother's farm.
Go to the cousins for the summer. Or,
all of that happened.
I couldn't imagine these kind of things. But that was a different way of looking at childhood, you see.
Yes.
And this is what I say to people. Right?
But
just
they
to,
bear
yeah.
those scars, yeah, and then they raised us.
Yeah, exactly. And this is what I, on that, I always say to people, your mother is a better version of what happened in her life from her mother, and so you're a better version than your mother. It's like an iOS upgrade. And so they begin to see themselves as like, you know, oh yeah, that's actually true. She tried her best to be better than what happened to her.
Yeah.
And so she tried a bit better than what happened.
Yeah.
And I'm trying a bit better than what happened to me.
And it's why I look at my kids and go, thank God, because they're better than I am. Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what you would want.
I wouldn't say that about my kids. Children. Well, I mean, it's impossible.
Yeah, your kids. No, that's a different podcast. But yes, yeah, so first of all, you can't always step away. And I do think forgiveness, particularly in family
really
dynamics,
important.
Is really important.
That doesn't mean that you have a very, you know, just to go on the forgiveness part, it's really important. Forgiveness for me is about accepting someone as they are, you know. And it might be about protecting myself from them, but it allows me not to be hurt by them.
Yeah.
When you have forgiveness and you allow someone to be who they are, then you're not you're not having an expectancy of what they should be as a parent.
But here's the thing. People are just listening to this and it's not that long since Christmas. So they've probably seen more of their families and many times than they would their extended family in particular. And maybe they have evolved and they are, you know, they're now at the point in their life where they go, yeah, I can forgive. I have insight. I can understand why someone is coming from where they're coming from. They didn't have it easy. But they're still doing to me what they've always done to me, which is demanding my attention, demanding
passive
my input,
stuff
all
whatever,
this stuff. Yeah. And being that drama king or queen that is so difficult to deal with. So one of the things is about forgiveness, but then there is about boundaries.
Having teeth.
And stepping away.
Yeah, but having teeth too. If I have a sibling who says things to me at Christmas, you know what I mean? As you said,
you're better at this than me. I tend to shut up and put up. But in a way
but then you leave, you see, in some ways, and you're driving on the road going, that's what I should have
I am a good mental detacher.
Yeah, yeah.
I could be totally detached from you now and you wouldn't know.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's a great skill. That's a,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's a good skill.
And I kind of step back in my head while I'm still present and nodding and smiling. But in my head, you're now dead to me. but do you know what I mean?
Okay.
I think you can do that.
Yeah.
One of the things I think, you can tell me what you think, is when someone is that dramatic person and you're trying to, is don't meet the drama with drama.
No.
Don't indulge it every time as an, oh my God, that's terrible.
Yes. But see, people.
More like, oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, you know what I mean? Keep it low key.
That grey area is really important, kind of like idea that you're a bit grey with someone like that, you know, that you're not. Again, it's the idea I always say of runaway knock, you know, whose door did you knock on the most? The person who gave you the biggest chase. Whose door didn't you knock on? The person who didn't open. And so when someone comes to you repeatedly with drama and you see the patterns, don't open the fecking door. Don't let them in because, you know, they will dominate and they will consume your mental space there.
And sometimes because, bearing in mind that this is their personality type, they are a dramatic person, this is just a pattern of behaviour that isn't going to change for them unless they choose to.
More than likely not going to change.
So they are a bottomless pit
of need.
They're
quite resistant to change in psychotherapy as well, you know.
Yeah.
And so they are a bottomless pit of need, a bottomlessness of attention, but also a bit of control. They're very controlling with their drama. I mean, when you have a parent that's like that, they can often set the siblings against each other and stand back, and they're the peacekeeper, having created and orchestrated an architect of incredible, you know, conflict in the family.
People will probably recognize the person in your life that you've had the same conversation with over and over and over and over and over again, where they've come to you with a problem and you've said, well, you know what, you should do this.
And they don't
they listen. So you talk about it for 2 hours.
What do you do when people aren't listening to you, Kira?
Stop talking.
Exactly.
But that's what they'll do. They'll come to you and you'll go through it with them.
And then
they'll come back having taken none of it on board, and then they'll want to have this. What they really want is the conversation. They don't actually want
the
advice.
They want the
conversation in the moment, don't they?
And you'll see someone with successive kind of failed relationships. A dramatic person will have like a highway of littered skeletons here of like relationships, of like, you know, failed jobs. Often with, you know, dramatic people, they fail. There's a bit of failure to launch. They might be 32, still living at home and all that kind of stuff. And there's drama all around them.
Yeah, but they will have a litany of things. They'll have failed relationships,
maybe
a failed career path, maybe, as you say, failure to launch altogether. Because that is the thing. It's a personality type, and personality types have patterns of behaviour that repeat.
That they learned very young brought them a bit of currency and gave them a little bit of status or some sense of need, being mattering to people or feeling valued. But a really good psychotherapy question here in the therapeutic kind of space is, I'd say to someone, if we were talking, and I can spot, you know, you're quite dramatic, whatever, I'd say, Kira, if we weren't talking about this, what would we be talking about? and all of a sudden you kind of you get an incredible silence, because you I know there's a real fire burning over here, which is your sense of self-crack.
Is and the drama a distraction
Absolutely.
From the actual inner
real stuff,
problem,
yes.
the turmoil? So the drama is almost like a crutch that you lean on drama, because drama I feel I can exist with.
I'm familiar with it, and it's easy to manage.
But coming back to the...
It's a very good point what you make there. No, it's really, really, that's kind of the core.
Yeah.
The internal disquiet, the internal upset, yeah. the fractured self.
So you do dysfunctional external, things yeah. to manage it.
Yeah, exactly.
So many things that
it's
we do.
It's very sad when yeah. you think about it. Because we can be quick to kind of castigate the dramatic person and say, oh, I'm freaking sick of her. She's always the way, or he's always the... But actually, there's an incredible lack of sense
oh, yeah.
of self.
And a trauma and a kind of a wounded inner yeah. child and yes. all of those things. But it's still... I think one
around.
Of the key things for the people dealing with them is remember that thing, that you can have the same conversation on a loop with them and it will make no yeah. bloody difference. So is that the best use of your time?
Exactly. And what you said there was brilliant. You know, in that relationship, you can be in that situation. You can sit down and have a coffee and they can spill out all their stuff, but you're not taking it on. And you're not actually giving them the reaction. Oh my God, I can't believe. Because you know this has happened 20 times in the last couple of years. So you're just falling into the pattern. But people, just this last point here, people love, some people like to be the martyr to other people's dramas too. Because it gives them a role. I can't believe she always does this to me. She pulls me in. And I'm always, I was like, no, stop playing the martyr. Just have a bit more about yourself.
Yeah. I do think it is important in us to recognise patterns. It's a yeah. kind of an evolutionary thing. We recognise patterns like the red and black on a yeah. snake. Danger, danger.
Yeah, absolutely.
Recognise the behavioural patterns in people around
That's
you
a great point.
Who make you feel uncomfortable. Because I know, and I know this, that there are groups of people who I engage with, you know, friends, work colleagues, whatever, who... I love their company. I feel it's like a warm bath and it's fun and it's whatever. And then I have groups of people that I also have to engage with for whatever reason. And I'm either distant from them or detached from them or occasionally uncomfortable. And I do think you need to listen to those emotional triggers you have.
Right.
Like, because some people, why do you feel uncomfortable? Why do you feel a bit compromised in some way or
low about yourself after their company?
It's because whatever they are doing, you are reacting in a way that you don't like, you don't want, and you are somehow...
You're fitting into a role that you know
yes.
isn't exactly authentic.
And that's exactly.
That's
and
really
and that's
point.
Why going back to things like family dynamics at Christmas, where we all fall back into...
15 again.
Our 14-year-old selves.
I speak to myself before I go back in.
I'm not 14.
No, don't go back in there. I'm the youngest in this family system. Don't go back in there. And within 5 seconds, I'm saying something I said when I was 14. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I always think it's like the event horizon of a black hole. You know, those families of origin, they'll just suck you back into a role.
Those dynamics are so set in stone that even as a fully fledged, competent adult with a
semi-competent adult.
A successful enough life out there, you walk back in and you start dropping wet towels on the thingy, slamming doors and being like,
the milk is left out.
Stroppy, like, I don't want to.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And you're like, hang on, I'm 50. Do you know what I mean? So it's
like Al Pacino, you know, in Godfather. Just when I thought I was out, they reel me back in. And
I can never get away. Exactly.
Your family
that line.
Of origin is that. Like, it pulls you back.
So obviously, we're talking a lot about stepping back and protecting ourselves. Do you think there's ever a point in confronting the person, Richard? Actually saying, do you know what? Do you see what you do and calling them out on it?
I think that's a really good point, Kieran. I suppose it depends on the nature of your relationship and what you see the future of the relationship to be, right?
Because that could definitely prompt the end of the relationship, couldn't it?
It can bring a hard full stop to the relationship. But if it's a family member or if it's a sibling and all that, I would always recommend when I'm speaking clinically, you know, that it is important that you do say to somebody, you know, that was very, whatever happened there, you know, that was very hurtful what you did there, the drama you created around that. I would have that confrontation with someone, and I wouldn't do it in a way that's not blaming. I'd always give advice about how you have that conversation, because a dramatic person will shut that down. If they feel their very core has been challenged, they'll shut it down. And I'd always say to someone, if it was just, say, if you're my sister and you brought more drama into the family, I'd say, here, you know, I'd say we're very young here, you know, we've a lot of life together here, let's try to figure this out a bit better. I start off without kind of going, Kira, you're fucking this and you're that. I try to frame it in the way I want to have a relationship with you.
You had me at very young here.
Yeah,
so
exactly. I knew I got you there with that. You know what I mean? So then I'd bring it in and say, you know, and then I'd bring in whatever happened, the drama that happened, and say, I can't keep getting caught in this.
Yeah.
You know, it's not good for me. When you were in the house last time and you left, I was really upset. I've been really upset for a long time because of this.
I suspect that's something people will really only do when their back is to the wall, as in they've had enough.
Yeah.
And they're kind of going, oh, look, this,
see, that's how this,
this could be a make or break time, I'm going to say it. And sometimes it will break and sometimes it will fix, I suppose. But it is hard for people to do that, largely, I suspect, because many dramatic people, many dramatic people surround themselves with amenable people, kind people, caregivers, people pleasers.
Yes.
That's who they seek out, because we're like jigsaw pieces, humans, aren't we? We find, you know, the domineering person finds the submissive person.
Exactly,
we do that. And this is the same idea. The dramatic person that wants all the attention finds the person who's willing to give it.
Exactly. And I would say, if you are the person listening to this and you are the person who is amenable and you are agreeable,
you are the people pleaser.
And you're the people pleaser, right? I would always look at that, because ultimately, I think it's the roots of self-loathing in middle age, mid 40s or 50s, you realise you're not exactly being authentic. And what I do in my clinic,
the people pleasers aren't being authentic.
No, they're not. You see, how can you be saying yes to everything and be authentic? Who wants to do everything? Your yes has no value.
Do some people, in your view, because I do think that there are people who are naturally caring. I don't mean naturally good or anything, but natural nurturers or caregivers. And those people get a certain satisfaction from being needed. They need to be needed.
Well, I think they were corrupted in their childhood, and particularly where they came in the family dynamics. You know, those things
really
matter.
I think women are raised to be caregivers and the need to be needed.
And the eldest daughter.
Because I know, when, as we're talking about this, I'm identifying going, I sometimes make myself into different
shapeshift
person in front of me.
Exactly, and you want to fix them quickly, and you want to give, and it gives you a sense of purpose and a sense of value and meaning. And
exactly,
mattering. It's such a big
word. I'm not saying I'm good. I'm saying I have some need to be needed,
exactly.
Or else I've been groomed to think I should be needed.
It's the grooming part.
I think so too.
I think we raised our daughters, and I was very conscious of having three daughters, and it bites me in the arse sometimes when my 15-year-old tells me no to something, you know. But I'm also thinking, good, she can argue, and she doesn't want to do something. That's good. She can make her point. That's great. I want them to have teeth. I don't want them to be carers. I want them to be compassionate.
You don't want them to be passive.
I don't want them to be passive.
There's a difference between being compassionate and being passive.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want them to, and I don't want them to think their only value is yes. That's where a people pleaser develops, you know, that they see their only value in yes, and my only value is in helping you. What about me here? What the hell am I in all of this drama?
That is one of the most powerful things I've heard. If you think your only value is in yes, then you're in trouble
in
your relationships.
You're in serious trouble. I meet him in a
because
clinic.
People will take advantage of you, and you will be willingly walking through it with them.
Here is the thing that I'm writing about this at the moment, right? Here's the real problem with this. A people pleaser wants to please people, right? But we can all spot a people pleaser a mile away, can't we?
They're kind of sometimes a bit sappy and a bit boring. Because if you're only saying yes
but
all the
don't
time,
respect,
that's a bit,
but
no,
here's my thing,
it's a bit dull.
So if my desire is to please you and to be liked by you, because my only value is in you liking me, Jesus Christ, that's also going to be in flux. But first of all, you won't like me because you'll see me, as you said,
going
very quickly, sappy and all the rest, and you can take advantage of me, and God, Richard will do whatever you want him to do, right?
We like people we respect. So people pleasers, who are the other side of the coin to the drama queens, they need to remember what we actually like in a person, is not being a doormat.
We respect the person who'll say no to us. You know what I mean? We respect the person who we feel is a bit more authentic. If they don't want to do something, they'll tell us.
Yeah.
And so the person who's people-pleasing, this is this real sad part of the people-pleasing position, you get kind of rejected by a social group because nobody kind of values you, and then all of a sudden you've created this persona of a people-pleaser that's been rejected. That's the roots of self-loathing, you know what I mean?
Does that make you an even bigger doormat for people then?
You lean more into the position.
So the trick to all of this is to listen to your feeling in here, and when you feel someone's taken advantage or that they are, it's all about them all the time, this drama person, it's all about them. Listen to your voice, go, I have a value. It can't be all about them. some little bit of it has to be about me.
And I find this topic really, really important because I see so many people trapped in it. And I work with so many brilliant women in my clinic, you know, and they're in their mid-40s. And it's kind of funny to me in some ways, but it also illuminates the inequity that goes on in our society, the real silent stuff, you know, around the third session, because I'm working on this idea of people pleasing. I've looked at their family system, where they came, the messages they got from the family. And it's not the parents were mean to do this. It was just that it helped them to make sense of the complexity of the family. You're the eldest, you'll be the carer for the kids now when they come along, and later on you'll care for us when we get older. That's the kind of roles that we put into people. But it's funny, in the third session generally a woman will say to me, my husband wants me to stop the therapy because, you know, what's happening, she's becoming a little bit more authentic, a little bit less, you know, I mean, I think there's a really unspoken problem in our society, and I think that's, we have, yes, equity in our working space. You know,
you've reminded me of one of the times when I was in clinical practice, a patient who had quite a dysfunctional marriage and a very domineering husband, but it was the wife attending me, and we did a lot of work on that and a lot of talking around that. And after about 2 months, who arrived into the practice demanding to see me very, very angrily was a husband whose wife wasn't playing ball anymore. Yeah. And
And that's it. And I'd say to anyone listening to this, if you're at home and you're lashing the clothes into the washing machine, or you're flinging the door of the dishwasher up, or you're, you know, that anger is, it's a knocking. Listen to it. There's an inequity in the system.
Honour your feelings. Yeah. Listen to your feelings.
Listen to your feelings. Listen to that anger. That's a good thing. That's something speaking to you from deep within to say, hang on a second, this is actually unfair. This isn't what should be put on you, foisted on you. That was an archaic system and archaic ideas that were given to us. Challenge them. Change the system by changing how you react.
I suppose lastly, because, you know, I think we've teased out a lot about where it comes from and how it makes you feel if you're dealing with it. Are there any, do you think, really good tips for people who are like, oh my God, I'm listening and this is my sister or this is my brother or my mother or whoever it is. It's my boss and I can't get away. I can't leave this job.
Exactly.
So we've said step back, protect yourself a little bit. Don't meet the drama with the drama. We've talked about those types of things. But is there like a toolkit that just to navigate it, and maybe even, because I always think you can't change the other person, but you can change yourself.
Exactly.
And when you change subtly, other people change around you.
Absolutely. It's like jazz music, yeah.
It totally is.
Yeah.
And like you're there riffing away.
Yeah, exactly.
And just change the riff.
But you get caught in the You get caught in the scale of what's been going on for years. And I was like, don't play those notes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's a really important kind of...
So you're now playing a slightly different tune.
You're not doing anything extraordinary here, but it might be the most important change, because it's a second order change in psychotherapy, you know, in psychology. I can't change you, Kira, okay, but I can change your impact on me. And by changing that, maybe I might actually change you, because our conversation or dynamic will shift if I'm not getting pulled into all the drama and I'm a little bit more gray in my relationship with you, and I'm not giving you too much, and I'm not leaving the house upset by what you say, because I understand you and I understand your need for these patterns. I understand your need. This is how you process your emotional disturbance. You want drama all around you, but that's not my need. And you don't get access to my, you know, internal world, my core here. And so when you dump this stuff on me, I'm not open to that. And so eventually you'll stop dumping it on me. So that will change. That will actually change you.
And one of two things will happen then. The person may grow a little bit.
Yes,
the dramatic person.
Or they could reject you.
And they might. Yeah. And they might find someone else to trauma dump
on.
They
will.
Because they have a silo that they need to,
they
you know.
They have that key that they like to play.
Yeah, but that can be okay too, because at least you've protected the bit
you've
of you.
You've been more authentic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's the really important thing. It's about really seeing all of us and the mess of all of us, right? And then at this, as you get a bit older, you decide, what do I want in my life? And, you know, there's a bit of toxic positivity out there at the moment where it's about get rid of all the difficult people in your life. That's ridiculous. We're all messy.
I think that is ridiculous.
We're all messy.
That's the kind of Oprah Winfrey, cut them out, cut them out.
What the
really?
Hell?
It's
what
my
hell?
Mother, it's my brother.
Exactly.
No, like, we're ridiculous. Irish, we don't do that.
No, we don't. No, but it's true. And that's it. And if there is somebody like that in your environment that's bringing you down or makes you feel bad or whatever it is, just watch that impact that they have on you, because you can't change them. You can change, you know, how you feel about stuff. And if you feel there's an opportunity to change them, I'd have a conversation with them about it.
And I also think maybe the last thing that I would say about it is if they do withdraw from you, that's okay, because think of it this way. If your only value
to them
was as a place to dump their crap on you, is that really the role that you wanted to have in someone's life? And if that was your value to them,
it was never real.
You're worth more than that.
Yeah. But it was never authentic.
No.
If that, cause
you were providing a service.
You were just
it was
playing
transactional.
A role, playing a role that you weren't happy in, that exhausted you, that actually impact on your mental health and that little bit of emotional, you know, bar there of happiness and joy.
It was transactional. It wasn't about affection or closeness or connection.
So if that happens, that's what's there. You see it?
I think we have that sorted now,
do we?
We
do.
I think we've solved that problem.
I think we might be the dramatic people in other people's lives. They're listening to this going, those two dopes talking about how to manage. Dramatic people.
That is our lot on They Mess You Up for this week. I am Dr. Ciara Kelly.
And I'm Dr. Richard Hogan. Thanks for listening. And if you enjoy this podcast, please give us a 5-star rating or even recommend it to a friend. Follow us on Instagram, They Mess You Up Pod, and we'll talk to you next week.